Hey campers, KJ here. In this week's episode, we talk to the brilliant Jessica Abel, a creativity coach extraordinaire, about how to get past whatever's stopping you and develop a sustainable creative life. In so many ways, it's a timely episode, and it will inspire you to get in there and get some work done. But it may also inspire you to wonder what planet we're living on, as we lightly discuss such exotic activities as driving children to school and going to work. Sorry, that was Planet February, also known as the good old days. We were pre-recording for some planned travel that, well, you know the drill. As we press go on this episode, life has changed for all of us, but in every other way, this call to creative action is completely timely. So take a break from the news and revel in it. It's also a great time to check out our sponsor, Author Accelerator, where you'll find a free 7-day writing challenge that could help you narrow in on the next project you want to write. And let me just say, I love that thing. I do it over and over again whenever I lose focus or want to start something new. You can find it at authoraccelerator.com/amwriting.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone. I don't remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause.
I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now 1, 2. Okay.
Hey, I'm KJ Della Antonia, and this is Hashtag Am Writing, the podcast about writing everything. Fiction, nonfiction, proposals, pitches, emails about fiction, nonfiction, proposals, and pitches, because in short, this is the podcast for writers about sitting down and getting our work done.
I'm Jess Leahy. I'm the author of The Gift of Failure and the upcoming, forthcoming, coming out in 2021, The Addiction Inoculation, about preventing substance abuse in kids. And you can find my work all over the place, the New York Times, The Atlantic, and Washington Post for the most part.
I am KJ Dell'Antonia. I am the author of the novel The Chicken Sisters, which you will be able to buy in June of 2020, but you can pre-order now should you care to do so, as well as the book How to Be a Happier Parent. I'm also the former editor of the New York Times' Motherload blog, a regular contributor there, and in a variety of other places. And sadly, you cannot see me, but I am sporting a blue manicure that matches my book cover.
It's very, very impressive. I got to see pictures of it. It was very impressive. We have a guest today. Super exciting. We love talking to guests about stuff that really is about being in the weeds of the writing. And I realized, KJ, we didn't even talk ahead of time about who would like to introduce our wonderful guest today. Would you like to do that, or would you like me to do it?
I would like you to do it.
Okay. Our guest today is Jessica Abel, and she has done so many cool things. Really, her gig, her jam is she is a writer. She talks a lot about really how we tell stories. I'm going to let her put this all in her own words. But the thing I love so much about what she does with her work is, from a graphic point of view, from a radio point of view, from a writing point of view, how we tell stories that feel, as she said, urgently necessary, which is something I love. It's what creates those driveway moments. And so we wanted to have her on the podcast really to talk about how we tell stories, how we function when we are really feeling in the deep, dark weeds or in the forest of those stories that we tell. So Jessica, thank you so much for coming on our show.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much for having me. I think this is really going to be fun.
This is going to be so great because, like I said, I was putting together your introduction, and I wrote in just big, huge letters, how we tell stories that are urgently necessary really seem to get at, you know, your place in creativity. And I'm really excited to talk about all of that.
Yeah, I love talking about storytelling and how it works, and, you know, both from a functional, you know, how does the writing process actually work, but also, how do we create creative lives that are sustainable and resilient and support the kind of creative work that we want to be making?
Well, and you do this thing, this creative focus workshop. You also have a podcast about the creative work and out on the wire. And really, you can start wherever you would like to start in terms of talking about your approach to creativity, which is really why we have you here.
Oh, well, okay. That's an open invitation.
I know. Go. Because when you came, you actually came to us with some really just the reason you're here is you had such enthusiasm and such interest in how stories get told and what happens when people get stuck. And honestly, that's the thing I was really taken with is we get a lot of questions about what happens when the process of creating something starts to feel so big and so unwieldy that you can't see your way. And you have a great way of talking about this, that you can't see your way out. And so that was my particular thing that I was really excited to talk about because I just emerged from that deep, dark place just recently.
Congratulations.
And I am just hoping that I emerged from it because I keep thinking I'm out of it. And then the next week, I find myself back in it. So I'm feeling good at this exact moment. But yeah, some coaching about the deep, dark forest of the middle of whatever the project is and how those sinking feelings of, oh my gosh, I'm never going to be able to either do this or do this again. Yeah.
That's, no, I'm really, I love that stuff. I mean, I really, I got this framework for thinking about it from when I was working on my book Out on the Wire. So for anybody who hasn't seen Out on the Wire, it's a graphic novel or a graphic book. It's not a novel. It's an essay basically about storytelling that where I went and interviewed, probably 35 or so of the best radio and podcast producers of narrative audio out there, one of whom is Jad Abumrad of Radiolab. And Jad had a talk that he did at Third Coast Festival a number of years ago where he talked about what he called the German forest. And he called it the German forest because for him, the concept was sparked by an experience where he was trying to create an audio piece about Wagner, about the Ring Cycle, therefore German, if you see what I'm saying. But then when I translated this to sort of the larger sense, I was like, oh, no, everybody does. This is a huge thing and everybody goes through this. I decided to drop the German part because it was confusing and just call it the dark forest. and which is, I think, pretty much like, I don't even have to explain it to writers and creative people, you know, what I'm talking about when I say the dark forest. I mean, it just immediately clicks into place. People know what I'm talking about instantly because we've all been through it. And what I think is the most important thing about this phase of the work is to understand, I mean, when you're in it, it feels awful. It feels like you will never escape and you have chosen the wrong life path and everything is going to fall apart forever. And that is a very common feeling. Everybody feels that way. So knowing you're not alone and that's not weird, I think is really important. But then beyond that, knowing that in fact, the moment that you're there is, the reason you're there is because you're trying to do something really ambitious that you have never done before and maybe nobody's ever done before.
And that's what I loved that you talk about is this positive, the fact that no, being in the dark forest, being in this darkest sort of scariest place is a good thing. That's actually a positive. That means you're getting somewhere.
It does. It means that you are in a moment of, you know, danger for your story or for your work because you could decide to bail at that moment because it's too hard. And it's not good in the sense that it feels bad. I'm not trying to diminish that at all, but it absolutely is a good sign because basically I think it's part of this. And as I've continued to work on this for the last few years, I've realized there's so many different depictions of this creative process that all essentially follow the same path. And if you can kind of picture it as like a graph or something like that, you start at the top of this graph and you're going upward with this crazy optimism about what this project's going to be like. And you're just like, oh my God, it's so exciting. I love this thing. It's so amazing. And you dive right in. And as you dive in, it starts to get complicated. You start to see, oh, well, then I'm going to have to do this. I'm going to have to learn this thing. I'm going to have to do this research. I'm going to have to figure this out. And as you do that, you get, you know, so you have uninformed optimism and then you have kind of informed optimism as you sort of round the curve of that first peak and start heading down a long journey to the bottom. And eventually you hit pessimism and, you know, possibly this dark forest period. If you're doing something that's challenging enough, you're going to hit the dark forest. And the reason is that you've done all this gathering and research and you've written reams of stuff, probably notes and thoughts and, you know, outline drafts, all this kind of stuff. But you haven't yet consolidated your knowledge into like a thesis or if you're talking about fiction, you know, you haven't quite figured out what this all means and what is the real heart of the book or whatever it is. And you're reaching, you're stretching your abilities to their utmost to pull all these things together and create something coherent out of it. And that feels awful because it feels like you're never going to reach the other side of this gap. But you will if you keep at it. And then as you come out the other side of this pit, assuming you don't bail at that point, you start heading into like informed pessimism and like informed optimism as you start heading back out of this stage. And then there's this other stage, which also can cause people to bail, which I call the Khyber Pass, which comes from something Ira Glass said when I was interviewing him for Out on the Wire, where he said, you know, I don't generally, because he plans so well and he's just so good at what he does, he doesn't generally get lost in the dark forest on episodes, but he does get stuck and procrastinates when he just has to execute the thing he knows that needs executing. And you just have to, it's like a long, slow march up that hill, and you know how hard it's going to be because you have consolidated your knowledge, you have figured out what you're going to do and how it's going to work. And so as you walk back up, you have to put on a sort of, I'm going to work, you know, mindset and get through all the work that needs to happen in order to actually finish the thing. And then you get to the very end and you're back up the other end of the slope, maybe even higher at the beginning. And you're like, this was awesome. Look what I did. This is amazing. And then you forget all what it was like and you do it again.
That's when the amnesia, well, then that's what I was going to say, is that's when the amnesia can sometimes stick, yes. Kick in for authors. And then you completely forget.
The necessary amnesia.
Well, and that's why this is so incredibly helpful when you document these steps, when you articulate these steps, because you really just described the process of writing this last book. And I'm right now in that place that you talk about with Ira Glass, where, you know, I know the editing needs to get done. I know I'm completely capable of doing it. I know exactly what I have to do. It's just, this is the slow march. And mm-hmm. What's really fun about this is, like, when you were talking about all these stages, is I actually have these very clear memory touch points with this past book for all of those steps. And being able to not only know that they exist for other writers, but to be able to find the positive in the steps that are the hardest. When you talk about that dark place, and, you know, Mary Roach talks about that research flail. I talk about, you know, getting into the, going down the rabbit holes with the research, and that's a necessary, but very dark and very scary place to go, because you can't see your way out, but you have to just have this faith that at some point, you're going to have enough of the landscape that you know how to get back out.
Absolutely. And I think that you know, what you don't see when you're in that dark, depressed place is like every day you're making new connections, and you, as long as you come back to the work and you don't abandon it, you're going to continue building the scaffolding that you need to get out and to get to the next thing. But you don't necessarily see it while you're doing it, because you're like, this isn't going to make any sense. I don't care. This isn't working. But you're trying all these things and, you know, failing at some and succeeding at others. And eventually it'll all stack up and be something that really makes sense. But you can't see it when you're in the middle of it. I think you're saying this in a different way, but like, I think the value of giving it these weird names that I've come up with is that if you can look at yourself and say, like, why am I dragging around and being horrible to people for the last week or two? And like, why does everything feel like, you know, nothing's ever going to get better? Oh, I'm in the dark forest. Oh, right. Okay. And then you can kind of just, you know, you can stop blaming yourself for feeling that way. And really just naming it for me helps me understand that I'm going through an intellectual process and I don't have to take it out on all my loved ones, you know, like.
Well, and you really need that name to keep yourself in it, right? I mean, the number of times a day that I carry on the mental dialogue of, oh my God, this is so bad. Oh my God, this is probably not what should be happening right now. Why are these people, oh, this is, and the number of times that I have that and then sort of have, okay, but we're just going to write it anyway, because it's the only way. You just have to write it anyway. It's a constant, it's this constant thing in your head. So to be able to say, because this is the dark forest, and if you don't keep writing, you're just going to sit here forever and probably just die.
I'd like to live.
Okay, the project will die. I'd be fine.
I'd like to live in uninformed optimism all the time, because that is high. That is a high. The problem is, like, for me, that moment of, oh my gosh, I have the best idea is the most amazing You get this adrenaline, and then you have to write the book proposal for it. And then it gets hard, and then you realize, oh my gosh, there's no way I can ever organize this thing. And it's ruining it to organize this thing, because before it was just this beautiful, shiny object that I found and I was excited about. Now I have to make it all ugly with organization. And that process is just a part of it. And I love the fact that Ira Glass has trouble with procrastination. And it's important for me to know that, because when I sit down to edit this afternoon, because I didn't get as much done this morning as I was hoping to get done, I'll be like, okay, Ira Glass has to do this too, I guess. All right, I'll do it.
He absolutely does.
Really beautiful too. Yeah.
I love the high of, you know, you're driving along in the car, right? And you're going to be home soon. So you're going to do all this work. You've got all these great ideas, because you're going to do all the things. You're going to find these booksellers, and you're going to contact them, and then you're going to write this great post, and then you're going to fix your email, and then you come home and there's the laptop, and it's just like, oh. Boy, was going to do is so much better than actually am doing.
So now that we've plotted all this out and you've given it these wonderful names, is there a way for writers to think about these places and move from one terrain to the other, from the scare, even if that's just from the, you know, the high of the uninformed optimism into the dark, scary place of the actual having to deal with the details, or to get out of the dark forest scary place?
Well, I think that's when we move into my other body of work, the work in Growing Gills, which is my mm-hmm. book about how to find creative focus in your life even when it's totally chaotic, come home and face the laptop even though your children are coming home in an hour or whatever. And that's all about creating the room in your life for writing and for all of the fighting you're going to do against writing and have habits and systems in place that will support you even when it's really, really difficult. So I think that the thing I would say about specifically about the dark forest phase of work is that the most important thing you can have at that point is a solid writing habit, just a habit where Yay. You sit down and you do the thing every day. Even if you're not getting anywhere, even if you think that you're, you know, should be taken out back and shot for the quality of what you're creating, like, you know, you still have to show up to the work every day. And I really advocate a habit that is time bound and not word bound. You know, it's not quantity bound, but really just like, I mean, it's quantity, but it's time quantity. So, and if it's really, really difficult and you're emotionally suffering, like you're in a place of, you know, anxiety and depression and, you know, really endangering your mental health, that kind of thing, then finding some way to engage with the work that doesn't trigger you for long enough that you can ease back into it.
That's a really good idea. I mean, we talk a lot about word goals, mainly because we've been doing this for a long time and that's what works for us. But it's really important to remember that doesn't work for everyone. And some people are super slow writers and some people are super fast. And so to create sort of your own individual goals that allow you to feel like you're getting, you know, you've got that routine going every day is mm-hmm. really important.
Well, and you both yeah. work in journalism,
right?
Well,
I think it's
right?
easiest.
Right, exactly.
I'm
well, work
to
well, past I mean, time. Past
in
tense, yes.
Come yeah. out of journalism. Worked. And yes. I've worked yeah. with a bunch of people who yeah. are recovering journalists in my program, the Creative Focus Workshop. Some of them still working journalists, but they're trying to figure out how to do things like write books and do other things that don't have that daily deadline. And, you know, word count is motivational. An editor breathing down your neck is motivational. You know, knowing the thing has to show up in the newspaper tomorrow is motivational. It's really hard to show up for yourself without any determined known goal for the thing.
Yeah.
And that's why those habits have to be so rock solid. And that may include building some kind of more, it's not artificial, but less hardcore accountability in. You know, with partners or friends, groups, anything,
right.
you know, and that's what we try to do in my group is like, you know, have weekly check-ins and stuff like that so people can you know.
Yeah, we text each other the word sticker when we get our sticker for the day, for the most part, whether that sticker is about 1,200 words or just 4 hours with my butt in the chair today, you know, filling it, because at this moment I'm in the most boring part of the editing process where I'm working on my endnotes, you know. So really that's a function of, yeah, I stuck with it for 4 straight hours. I get my darn sticker today. And those texts that we give, you know, each other back and forth, just saying, you know, I'm almost there, but I got to get there today. So it's 10 o'clock at night, but I'm going to write 50 more words just so that I can really actually do it. That, for me, is my biggest motivation, because it is really hard when I don't have an editor breathing down my neck and I don't have a hard and fast deadline for when something actually needs to be done. That's when I start putting those self-imposed deadlines in. The thing I wanted to say really quickly, you mentioned growing gills. The thing I love so much about that title is that being underwater is not in and of itself a crisis. And if you can be underwater but figure out how to adapt to that space, then you can get the work done. And that's why that title is so brilliant, because for most of us, we're just like, oh my gosh, get me out of the dark woods, get me up, get my head above water, whatever metaphor you want to use. But I love the idea that it's only through becoming acquainted with how it feels to be in that, to be underwater or to be in the forest is part of the process of becoming a better writer, creative person.
Yeah, and I actually really think that when you get to, if you want to, in your life, if one of the reasons you write, and I think it is true for most people, is that you want to have flow experiences, you know, you want your work to be peak optimal experience, you actually get the most flow from work that is going to put you in the dark forest, and sometimes in the dark forest. Like, there are moments when you're like, oh my God, everything is clicking together. I understand. And like, it, because you have to really experience flow, you have to be pushing your outer limits. It's fun and exciting to have a new idea, but it doesn't feel deep, you know?
Right.
Right. And I think that when people do bail out of the middle of a project because of another shiny object, they're depriving themselves of that opportunity to really stretch who they are and what they're capable of and feel like, I am my best self now.
I feel like there are gremlins of shiny objects dancing all around me. I'm like smack in the middle of a new novel, like really in the cran. And oh my goodness, every time I read something else, I'm like, oh, wait, I want to write a book that has, I want to write a book like that has a fantastical world of book guardians. I want to write a book that, oh, it's just like they're everywhere. And I don't normally feel that way. So it's clearly a forest feature.
Yes.
Well, in the forest, we've talked about this on the podcast. This forest comes up often in the guise of the question this has come up in the past couple of podcasts, actually, episodes, which is, how do you know when you're done researching and it's time to actually put pen to paper and get started writing? And sometimes that's a forest question, because for me, the second best high to the one I get when I'm in that uninformed idealistic place is the high of, oh my gosh, I can see it. I'm finally right there. I've been in this research, in this deep, dark research rabbit hole, all these metaphors we're talking about, and then all of a sudden the sun comes out and I can see the landscape in front of me. And for me, honestly, even better than writing the end, that's, I think, my second favorite high in writing a book.
Me too. I'm with you there.
Yeah.
I love feeling like a puzzle master, you know, moment when I have all these pieces and they start lining up. That is the best. Yep.
What do you tell people who get really stuck? We have a bunch of listeners who have written in the hashtag #AmWriting Facebook group about getting stuck in that place where they just want to stay with the research project because it feels quasi-productive, and at the same time, and it's still safe because you're not actually committing anything to the page. What do you tell people about getting to the point where you have to move on? You have to, even if it doesn't seem incredibly clear to you, how do you just move, get going again?
I mean, I think that the state that those people are in is perfectionism. I mean, they're trying to future-proof their lives by not creating a thing that can be criticized. And, you know, like going back to grad school for yet another degree is an extreme form of this that you see all the time, where it's like, you know, I don't feel they're feeling imposter syndrome. They're feeling like, I don't feel ready for this. I don't feel like I can stand, you know, that my ideas can stand up against the ideas that I see around me. And so they stay in research thinking that somehow, someday, you're going to feel ready. But you're not going to feel ready until you start making the things, ever. It's not going to happen. There's no such thing as knowing, learning things until you implement those things. Like, learning doesn't happen until you use the learning.
That's a really good point. Yeah, I find that until I actually start putting the word, my own words down around the research that I've been doing, that it really starts to coalesce. So, and I'm in that.
Well, and the temptation. The temptation of those things that are structured by other people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the thing about graduate school, or that's the thing even about research. Like, you could get to the end of their book, or you can, you know, come up with a list of pieces of academic research about a particular topic, and you can read them, and then you can feel like, okay, I understand that. Like, there's an objective outside measurement for having succeeded at those things, whereas for the most part, when you're trying to work on your own creative project, you got to be that measurement for yourself for a good long time before you get anybody else
for
involved.
Sure.
And that, it's terrible. I hate it. Please, could I have just like some, I guess that's the sticker thing. Can I just have some form of way of feeling like I've finished something?
Well, so that's the thing.
Some validation, please.
One of the other things I picked up from Out on the Wire research was this concept of the edit. And so not editing the way you're editing right now, but the edit, which is like a live event where the producers will typically, at these really, you know, high-end shows like This American Life and Radiolab and Snap Judgment and Planet Money, which are some of the shows in my book, when a producer has a rough cut of a piece, they will play it out loud, live, in front of a room of 3 to 15 people. And then everybody will lay into it and sort of think about, like, what is this really about? And what are we doing here? And what do we put where? And how about this? And how about that? And apparently, at This American Life, I didn't witness this because when I was visiting their show, it was like ages ago, they all now have it on a Google Doc, and everybody's logged into the Google Doc at the same time and all like commenting on the doc at like in real time.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's pretty intense, but it's also highly effective for getting these pieces together really quickly. What I got from that, though, was partly that piece, but also there are plenty of other times at which they are talking verbally about what they're working on and what they're stuck on with editors or with, you know, colleagues throughout the process of creating the piece, instead of like kind of going to their cave and creating and then coming out with something. They're like, what do you think? You know, they're actually talking about it throughout the process. And that's something I've always wanted to do and always done sort of ad hoc with my own work, where whether I'm working on fiction or nonfiction, I've wanted to, like, when I get stuck, I want to talk about it. I want to verbally, you know, work it through. And I always thought there was something mm-hmm. kind of wrong with me to need to do that I was like cheating somehow, until I saw it happening at these radio shows. And I was like, oh, wait, this is actually a technique. This is a thing. And so I've now kind of codified that too with a name calling it a focus session. And that's one of the things I really recommend when people are in the dark forest, is like, whatever you're stuck on, you know, find somebody in your writing group or a spouse or somebody who's going to be a sympathetic and engaged listener, and just talk at them really for 45 minutes or something like that. They don't need to fix things for you. That's not what it's about. They can reflect things back to you. They can tell you if they have ideas, but it's not about like, can you fix this for me? I typically fix it myself, mostly, you know, with a little bit of extra help. But that verbalization of it, I see logical fallacies in what my thinking, I see gaps. You know, and my husband's really good at this at this point. He didn't used to be. It took a long time to get there, but he didn't want to do it initially because he also felt like it was cheating. But now he'll do it. And I set out, I don't just ambush him either. I'm like, look, I need an hour. Let's sit down. And I talk it through, and it's amazingly effective. Like, it speeds things up so much.
Serena and I have done it in the car on the way to Jess's mm-hmm. house. And it is amazing because you need to, I mean, you and you're right. You need to say, give me an hour, because you gotta put the person where you are. You know, unless you're co-writing with someone, nobody knows what is going on in your in your work in progress. So you got to put them where you are, and then you got to talk at them until your brain sorts towards where you need to be, I guess.
Yeah.
It is super helpful, and yet it's really hard to do because there is a persistent terror, and I still have it, and I suspect Serena does too, that Serena will go, but that's a stupid idea. We all know, like, when I say that, you're like, oh yeah, she would nap, but that's what you feel like. Like, when I say, well, you know, but I was going to have the snail in the mountain, and then there was going to be a tree, that she's going to go, that's so stupid. A snail would never go to a mountain. That would be awful.
But probably not going to happen if you think about it.
It's really not.
But
it's
in the car is a great way to do this. I've done it in the car many, many times, because then the other person isn't doing anything either. You know you're not pulling them away from anything. And here's the other trick to it is record it. Record it on your phone. Ooh. And then listen back to it if you need to. Because a lot of times I'll come up with wording and, you know, solutions in the moment that I won't be able to reproduce later.
That's too scary. I mean, recording it is fine, but I can't tell myself I might not be able to reproduce it. I can. If I forget to record it, it's okay. What I come up with will
be just as good. It'll be fine. No, I mean, but I really like to, when I re-listen to it, though, it also sparks new ideas. Like,
Yes. No, I think it's brilliant.
I'm sure you
could
do it.
My poor children are stuck texting. My poor children are stuck texting me ideas in the car. Hey, sweetie, will you text me with this, just these words? pretty princess, pink hat. Dark in the woods. I'll know what you mean. Yeah. And then I'm, you know, at least I have the notes, but my poor children get stuck texting them to me all the time.
Yeah, I have my kids and my husband turn on my voice recorder regularly. And I'm like, I'm driving, turn it on. And then I just say the thing.
Yeah, the car is the best. The car. Yeah, we actually know someone also who has a white erase board in his shower.
That seems dangerous.
I would just spend all my time.
Very
in there.
A lot of water consumption for that. Yeah, no. For me, it's definitely the car. I have written such amazing books in my car. It's really a shame the rest of you can't read them because they never made it out of the car. But man, I'm so good. Also, the things I get done while I'm sitting in the car, like in my head, that you know, the basement's organ, everything. It's all done.
Well, I should spend more time in my car, obviously.
We live in places where in order to get anywhere, you have to drive for half an hour at least. So I also wanted to just point out, just if you're enjoying, listeners, if you're enjoying this conversation, and I'm highly tempted by this as well, Jessica has also written some textbooks on creating comics, which I have to admit, I have a creative, artistic comic drawing niece who is going to be receiving some copies of these textbooks because they look absolutely fantastic. I was sort of looking through them before we got online with you, and they look really, really great. And I love the idea also, KJ has discovered this. KJ loves to draw, and so often KJ will incorporate drawings with her descriptions of things, and it sort of can help her, you know, work through her ideas. And I love that idea, and I'm not artistic at all, so I'm highly jealous of people who can do that.
Yeah, there's actually studies showing that people who doodle during lectures or whatever learn the material better.
Increasingly, people are doing those sketch notes of my speaking events, and I take pictures of all of them because I look at, they help me. Love them so much, and it helps me see my own material in a new and different way that would never have occurred to me. And by the way, I think people who can sketch note really well are some kind of crazy magicians. People ask me all the time, oh, so you gave that person notes before you went on stage? And I'm like, no, they did this all on their own, like on the fly as I'm talking about these ideas. It's some kind of crazy dark art to me, but I'm so grateful people can do it.
I am sure it's a learned skill like anything else. I mean, I'm sure that they sort of come to it somewhat naturally, but you know, you say I love to draw and this is true, but if I don't sit around and do it, it wouldn't look like anything. If I hadn't set out to sort of, you know, to learn Adobe Draw and all that kind of thing, I
Oh,
I wouldn't know how.
Let me.
Nobody does it naturally.
Let me wallow in my dark forest. Thank you very much.
Okay, fine. Yeah, no.
Yeah, there's actually
Jessica,
there's a whole
it's a learned skill.
New profession in the last 10, 15 years of doing graphic recording and sketch notes at meetings and things like that. And so I know a bunch of people who've gotten into that. And yeah, there is definitely a learning curve. Even people who are really accomplished cartoonists, learning the specific ways that you're going to approach layout and, you know, translating ideas into pictures and things is definitely challenging. But it's a very cool thing.
Yeah, sometimes they do them on these like 10-foot long pieces of foam core, and I love those. But what I love even more is when someone has attended one of my events and does their own little sketch notes and sends me the pictures of those. I love them. I collect them. I love them so much.
Yeah, I love that. Actually, Austin Kleon did a talk of mine about one of those comics books like 15 years ago when we were in Austin.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That is pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
Oh, I forgot to take all the squeaky toys away from my dogs, so you may hear some squeaks in the backgrounds, and they are the background. It is just my dogs with their squeaky toys. Can we talk about what we have been reading? Jessica, did you think of a good book to talk about on this episode?
Yeah, I mean, I've been in the middle of a huge project, so I have not been reading a ton. But what I most recently reread or re-skimmed, re-noted was Atomic Habits by James Clear, because I'm working on for my group, which is called the Autonomous Creative Collective.
That's a good name. I like that.
Thank you. That's the sort of group that goes with the Creative Focus workshop. Anyway, we're doing Habits Month. So there's like a weekly challenge to do, you know, to sort of go through different things having to do with habits. Each month we have a theme. So I was rereading Atomic Habits to take notes and write some posts for that group. And I think it's a really solid book. I think it's, you know, I've not read the full Habits, you know, bookshelf at all. But I think that his methodology is really strong in terms of building habits. And since that's what we're talking about, I think it's pretty
It is a rapidly expanding bookshelf. And yeah, that one stands out as a really great one.
Yeah, it's very simple, you know, it like approaches things in a very simple way. And he does a lot of research and basis stuff in science, which I like.
Yeah, it's a good one. We've talked about that before. We like that here. Serena loves it too. It's good
stuff. My most recent fiction read, which I finished a little while ago, but I really enjoyed, was fifth season Broken Earth series from N.K. Jemisin, which is a science fiction series.
Ooh.
It's a trilogy. It's very, very cool.
Oh, I don't know that one.
I have been eyeing one of her series, but I don't know if it's that one because I was looking at book one, but they have it at Still North Books, which is our local bookstore. And I've been going, I think maybe I want to embark on that.
I think she's amazing. And the Broken Earth series was, I think every single volume of it won, you know, Hugo. It was like this huge thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm having this moment of getting back into things that I liked before I had kids. And I don't quite even know why I would have stopped reading. I used to read a lot of science fiction and fantasy, and then I stopped, and now I'm back. I used to paint my nails all the time, and then I stopped, and now I'm back. These are so unrelated, but I feel like
it's all related to life after our children get old enough that they don't need us every second of the day.
Guess so. Thank goodness for that. Go, children. Please don't need me every second of every day.
Speaking of which, KJ, what are you reading?
I was listening to the Book Riot Booked, Get Booked podcast, which I don't listen to that unless you have a lot of disposable income and feel like going and buying some books. It's a terrible idea. Never listen to it. Anyway, and they happened to be doing a romance episode in honor of Valentine's Day, presumably, and they recommended a book called What Happens in Scotland by Jennifer McQuiston, and I was having a terrible day yesterday. Just really a bad day for no reason at all, just a bad day. And I literally came home and I fed everyone dinner and I put that on my ebook reader and I sat down on the couch and I read the whole darn thing in like 2.5 hours. And it was super fun.
Okay, that title alone, that's a really, really good title right there.
It's a historical romance about a young woman who does not wish to ever, ever marry again because her first husband was terrible. And she wakes up surprisingly, married in an inn with a ring on her finger and no idea who the guy next to her is.
Ooh. Okay, so I just Googled,
and it's pretty funny.
I just Googled her, and I love this right here. It's in her bio. It says, a veterinarian and infectious disease researcher by training, Jennifer has always preferred reading romance to scientific textbooks. She grew up in the Shenandoah Valley of Virginia, but now lives in Atlanta, blah, 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 with her husband and two daughters, parentheses, who got a pony out of mom's book deal. Which we're not familiar with that at all.
We have to love that.
Yeah.
I love that. No, not at all.
So,
have you read anything good?
I've read two really good things. And actually, it was funny we were talking about sketchnoting because I really need someone to sketchnote Matthew Walker's book, Why We Sleep. First of all, the book's brilliant. This book it's been in the zeitgeist for a while. Everyone's been talking about it. I'm a huge sleep evangelist and I love this book so much. But man, I would love to see a graphic representation of this because there's all the science of the book and the brain is just fantastic. But I also read a really fun book. It just came out about a week ago, 2 weeks ago, something like that, by the time this comes out, called As Needed for Pain by Dan Perez, who used to be the editor-in-chief of Details magazine and had a crazy OxyContin habit, like seriously bonkers OxyContin habit. And the book was just a really interesting read about his life and how he dealt with his substance abuse and honestly about running a magazine under the Condé Nast banner. It was just a really entertaining listen. I was on my way to a speaking gig, and so most of this was in the car, and it really lightened my travel load. So I recommend it.
I was just eyeing that, so I'm gonna grab that one.
It was fun.
For me, it's going to be the magazine piece of it, but that sounded super fun. So before we sign off or do anything else, Jessica, first of all, you can be found at jessicaable.com, but tell us about your creative focus workshops and how some of our listeners can get a little a taste of what you do and see if they want to explore more.
Sure. Yeah. So I would love to offer your listeners a worksheet called What's Stopping You, which really addresses kind of any stage in the process, but in particular at the beginning, like what is keeping you from doing the thing that you want to be doing. And that's at jessicaable.com/WSY for What's Stopping You. So that would be great if you guys want to pick that up.
Yeah. I want to pick that up.
And then the Creative Focus Workshop is an online course and group coaching program that is findable at creativefocusworkshop.com. And what we do is really try to get everybody through the dark forest and finishing things.
Finishing is key.
Know. There's something you would think that when you get to the point where you're like, oh, all I have left to do is just these couple of edits, that I would be like cruising through. Yeah, let's get it done. But there's something about that last little bit before you get things done that's really, really hard. So that will 90%-er. Be greatly appreciated. Yep.
Really, really hard. All right. Well, find out more about Jessica Able, hit jessicaable.com. To find out more about the podcast, please head over to amwritingpodcast.com, where you will find the show notes for this and every episode. And that will include the links to everything we talked about today, to the worksheet that Jessica Able is offering, to giveaways that we do periodically, and all kinds of things. So you're going to want to head there and sign up to hear more from us, because really, could 45 minutes a week possibly be enough?
I think
probably
not.
No.
Until next week, everyone, though, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game. The hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perilla. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Pause, stop.
Thank you.